Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, children of all ages.
And especially you, fat, sweaty wrestling fans. This bout has a 30-minute time limit.
This contest is set for one fall.
Seriously, why even say one fall? It's always one fall.
Oh, you didn't know?
Welcome to Shoot Radio, the only pro wrestling show that threatens its fans with figure five leg locks, triple axe handles, and large packages. Wait, what?
Woo, woo, woo! You know it!
Let's move on. Now introducing the tag team champions from the not-so-mean streets of suburban Toronto. This is The Chris and his partner. And yes, I mean partner like that. From the well-landscaped subdivisions of suburban Chicago, it's Johnny P. Get ready, wrestling fans, to sit through this utterly ridiculous gimmick match known simply as Shoot Radio.
This is it, folks. Shoot Radio, episode 10. This is the final episode of this season. I will tell you one reason why Shoot Radio is awesome. It is the only pro wrestling podcast brought to you by a couple of doofuses named Johnny P and Chris. And Chris, let me ask you first, episode 10, the final episode of this first season. Give me some thoughts.
I can't believe we're here already. I mean, when we started this, it just felt like it would be such a long way away. I was actually kind of concerned. Okay, are we going to get to episode 5 or 6 and we're going to run out of things to talk about? But here we are, episode 10. We've got a great topic on tap, and we've already off-air discussed a lot more that we are going to talk about still. So I'm psyched. And what are we talking about today? We are talking about foreign objects.
Yes, foreign objects. And would you say that, just to kind of get right into it, Let's kind of define a foreign object in professional wrestling. Would you say it's just any item that's used in a match? Is that a good enough description?
I think so. You know, anything that's not in the ordinary course of a wrestling match. Like, I mean, a wrestling match is supposed to be, you know, from the pure sport aspect, supposed to be an unarmed contest. So anytime you're introducing anything like, you know, we'll get into specifics, but any sort of item that's beyond the scope of that, that is by definition a foreign object.
So a foreign object could be a weapon, a sledgehammer, a bat, a 2x4. A foreign object could also be something that's not quite as obvious, maybe just some brass knuckles in someone's trunks. They're going to use for one hit while the ref isn't looking, put them away. Now, a foreign object could also be an item that's part of a wrestler's gimmick too, right?
For sure. I mean, a megaphone, a cane, a potted plant. I mean, we've seen the gamut run over the course of wrestling history. You know, there's always room to be more imaginative in terms of, you know, what gets used as foreign objects.
Yeah, and some matches that we talked about in one of our previous episode, the gimmick match episode, some of these matches allow for certain foreign objects. Maybe there's a strap you've got to grab to, you know, whip somebody with, or sledgehammers allowed, or tables, ladders, chairs, of course, is a real popular one. But really, at its core, you hit on something. It's supposed to be kind of a, you know, mano y mano, you know, like, let's get in the ring and let's battle it out using traditional pro wrestling. And when a weapon enters that in some way, shape, or form, it has become a foreign object, and the ref should get involved. They don't always do, though, as we've seen.
Yeah, there's something to be said for officiating in pro wrestling. So what are some of your favorite foreign objects, either in general or, you know, specific ones associated with specific people?
Okay, well, I actually kind of like, I know it's
because I made a list.
Oh, you did? Wow, you're a bigger nerd than I am. I'm going to try to go off the cuff. I wish I would have made a list, you jerk. You're always making me look bad. Okay, one of my favorite ones, it's kind of, some people think it's kind of lame because it's one of those, it goes in the category of foreign objects that wouldn't really hurt. You know how there's like a category of, okay, that would really hurt, and then, oh no, that would never hurt. I like when someone hits somebody with the microphone. I don't know why. It's that thump sound. It's comical to me. Wrestlers always oversell it too. Like, oh my God, oh boom. You know, just like, I just hit the mic. I just hit my microphone. I don't know if it was the same effect, but I did it. And I love that kind of stuff because it's so over the top and so goofy, and it makes the sound effect. And it's so typical to like pro wrestling's you know, goofy circus kind of feel about it. So
it's what you have on hand.
It's what, yeah, I like it. So it makes for a great kind of ending. Like, and that's why I'm going to win the world title. Thump. You know, it's a great kind of, you know, period in a sentence. So that's one of my favorite, just general ones. One of my favorite gimmick based ones has got to be Al Snow's head. I thought that was hilarious. He did it in ECW. He brought it over to WWF when he joined, and it was great. The guy's crazy. He's got "Help Me" written on his face. He's got head
backwards.
He wrote it in the mirror, and he's got the head. He talks to it. He puts, you know, he looks to it for advice. He uses it in matches too, and it was just so awesome. He really took the crazy persona to the next level. And head was a big part of that.
It was a real multi-use foreign object. It was sort of it was almost a manager in a weird way.
Oh yeah,
it was a valet. It was a foreign object. It was a weapon. They got a lot of mileage out of a simple mannequin head.
Well, you know what's great is there's a lot of valets that give head. Al Snow's actually got head.
That's true. It was a nice, easy joke.
Yeah, I had to do it. I mean, come on. Wasn't that the beginning of his theme song? He's like, "What does everybody want? Boom, doo, 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 doo. What does everybody need?" It was great. I mean,
And wasn't that the whole genesis? I mean, it was always just a pun on, like, you know, if you want to get anything, if you want to get anywhere in wrestling, you need to give head or stuff like that.
Well, and it, again, multifaceted, as you said, you also have him at the same time doing the Job Squad gimmick, not to go too far on that. So his gimmick is based off of the fact that they won't let him win matches. And then yet he's got a head that's helping him win matches. But the underlying joke is everybody gets, I mean, it's perfect. I love Al Snow. I was a huge fan of his. When I see him pop up in a, you know, some kind of a, you know, independent or something here and there, I think he's great. I'm a big Al Snow fan. So he definitely won me over when he had head. And come on, his final match in ECW, all those, what do you call it? Styrofoam heads.
Wig stands.
Yeah. Is that what they're called? Like, yeah, I guess they're wig stands. They threw them all in the ring. They all had, it was so great. So just a goofy, memorable wrestling moment. And I loved it. So tell me about your favorite foreign objects.
Well, I mean, I'll go classic. I mean, the folding chair. I mean, that's just the seminal pro wrestling foreign object. I mean, when you, even people that know nothing about wrestling, like, they know that wrestlers hit each other with chairs. Like, that's just one of those things that's a classic. And it's ironically the same people that know that people in wrestling hit each other with chairs are often usually the first people to say, well, try and say to you, well, you know, that's fake, right? But I mean, you know, chairs in wrestling, those are one of the few things that, you know, that aren't faked.
Yeah, people sit on them. I mean, I love that too. You're totally right. Because if you talk to any of your non-wrestling friends, they're like, oh, a chair shot or something. Like, you know, just goofing around, friends, you know, messing around. And it's like, how do you know about that? You know, you're not a wrestling fan, but it is kind of that ubiquitous, you know, steel chair. Oh, on the chair. That, you know, kind of like the turnbuckle, even though it's not a foreign object, unless you take the padding off. But, you know, that same kind of thing, you know, it's, you're right. The chair is definitely a good classic one.
And in terms of a person specific one, I always like Jim Cornette's tennis racket.
Yeah, that was solid.
It's just like Mr. Fuji and, you know, other wrestlers like him or managers like him would carry a cane to the ring. It's like, okay, he probably needs a cane to get around. So it makes sense that he has one. I mean, there's no storyline reason that makes sense why Jim Cornette would need, you know, a tennis racket with a sequined case and feathers hanging off of it. You know, there's no reason he would need that. But yet, you know, it's in wrestling, it's just acceptable, and he never gets called on it. And I just always thought that's a great thing for a guy that's portraying, because, you know, his original sort of character when he was much younger was, you know, he was this spoiled rich kid that had all of Mama Cornette's money. So, you know, he's like, you know, he's on his way back from the country club. He just happened to have his tennis racket with him still.
every match is on the way home from the country club.
Or on the way. I mean, he, you know, why? Did
he ever call any of his, like, hits with the racket, like, a tennis move? Like, oh, he got me with the double fault or something, you know?
Not to my recollection.
That'd be awesome. I'm going to call him up and tell him to do that.
I don't know that he busts out the tennis racket much anymore.
Well, to play, maybe. Although he put on some weight. He could definitely use a few matches on the old courts, I think. Now, let me ask you about something similar. Jimmy Hart's megaphone. That's a classic one.
Yeah, that's a great one. And it was also a real, like, that defined him sort of as a manager, too, because he would be, and it, you know, see, that makes sense, because, you know, he's out at the ringside, and he's shouting instructions to his guy in the ring, or shouting encouragement. Like, it was a good, like, for somebody that was primarily a heel manager until he started being joined at the hip with Hogan sort of in the 90s and onwards. I mean, it was a real, you know, the referee would scold him for it, and he'd be like, what, you know, I just have this so my guy can hear me.
Yeah, it's like, oh, come on, baby. You know, like, it's, and that's part of his thing. And you said it was real. I thought wrestling was fake. That wasn't real.
What do you mean?
No, I'm just kidding. I don't know. Being stupid. But you're right. It was a real megaphone. So you know what's cool about the megaphone is that he's basically talking shit the entire match, totally getting in your head. And then he's going to hit you with it. It's perfect. I love that.
Yeah. I mean, it's, you know, words hurt.
On a similar note, what about the guitar? Honky Tonk
loved,
Man?
Loved the guitar. Like, that's just such a great, for anybody doing like a Music Man kind of gimmick and, you know, an entertainer kind of thing, like to come out to the ring with the guitar, it's just, you see it coming a mile away. And Honky Tonk Man was always good at, he didn't just come out and, you know, just blast somebody with the guitar instantly. Like, if somebody else got their hands on the guitar. And this had a lot to do with, you know, the heel commentator saying, you know, like, I can remember Jesse saying, you know, that instrument's worth $5,000. You know, he's got no right to put his hands on it. And then, like, as soon as Honky Tonk Man gets it, he, like, smashes it. And
dust,
you know,
dust flies everywhere because, of course, every $5,000 guitar is filled with, like, dust, right?
Talcum powder.
Yeah, awesome. You know, can you explain later on, Jeff Jarrett took over the guitar as a weapon? What was up with that? I never got that.
Well, he initially, when he was first in WWF, he was doing a country music star gimmick. Like, he was saing that this was sort of in the era of the WWF where, like, you couldn't just be a wrestler. Like, you know, wrestler had to be something you did within the context of your other job, be it, you know, plumber or NASCAR driver or anything like that.
Oh, but, this when he had the roadie?
Yeah, who was Road Dogg. And yeah, he was basically, his overarching point, and I don't even know how this makes you a heel, but, you know, he was going to use wrestling to forward his country music career. So,
well,
that was why he had the guitar.
It's definitely a heel move. Look at Jericho. He's used wrestling to forward his band's career.
It's true.
And he doesn't even play guitar. He just sings. But I thought it was weird. Jeff Jarrett still had the guitar gimmick as his anger.
Yeah, long after he abandoned the country music thing. Like, it just sort of stuck, I guess.
What about some other, like, weapon, like, actual well-known weapons? I mean, obviously, guitar is not really known as a weapon. It's used as one. I could think of, like, Triple H and his sledgehammer, which was all right. I didn't really get it, though. I didn't like it that much.
I want to talk about that since you brought it up.
Okay.
That's always been one that really bugs me. And
it's
something that's, I mean, okay, we're talking about a fictional universe of wrestling where, and I've crabbed about this before, where, you know, I can accept being hit with a microphone knocks you out every time.
Sure.
But it should knock you out every time, and that should remain consistent. For him to have the sledgehammer as his weapon of choice, I mean, within a wrestling paradigm, it's dumb because, I mean, you're never going to use us, like, you can't, even if like the sledgehammer head was made of rubber, like, you can't grab a sledgehammer two-handled, crank back, and hit somebody in the head with it. I mean, you're going to kill people. So, and thankfully they've never done that. But he uses it in the weird way that you sometimes, and you know,
so
he's
stupid.
He's grabbing the sledgehammer, like, with his hand over the top of it and, like, ramming it in your face. Like, that would do, I mean, it would certainly hurt the person you're hitting, but it would also succeed in breaking your hand.
No question.
Or he'll, like, you know, like, he's got the sledgehammer and then he turns it and rams the butt end of the handle into the stomach of his opponent.
The handle, or you're on the ground and he's going to, like, do, like, a pile driver with it. Like, come on, man. Like, Yeah, that's using a sledgehammer as a weapon in pro wrestling is the same as using a gun in pro wrestling.
Exactly. Like, and I have the same, and I don't want to like just sound like I'm crabbing on Triple H, because like long before that, like, okay, old school wrestler, Tiger Jeet Singh, like he would come to the ring with a sword. Okay. And he would like hit people with the handle of it. It's like why would you give a guy a sword? Like if they can't even wield it in a way that's like, I mean, obviously I'm not saying he's going to, you know, go out there and start cutting people's heads off, but I mean, if you can't wield a something that's like a weapon in the way that it's supposed to be wielded, like don't make it a plot device.
Right. Use something that you can actually use. And it's almost like you mentioned about the microphone. Yeah, that should knock him out. Okay, I could take an it's more believable to take an object that shouldn't do damage and they sold it and did damage, because that's what wrestling is. It's selling moves.
Exactly.
The other way around does not work at all. It does not work at all to, you know, in a sense, undersell. Oh, I get hit by a sledgehammer. You better not do that again. Like, why are you talking right now? You literally should be dead. And yeah, and Triple H too. A guy like Triple H, who I have tremendous respect for in the business, and he is a company man, like a wrestling guy, in most respects. And that's still his thing, and it drives me nuts. On the flip side, here's one I do like, going to exactly the way it's supposed to be. The Singapore cane / kendo stick. Perfect. Perfect weapon in pro wrestling.
I think it is, because, I mean, it is something that, I mean, it makes, I mean, the like you said about the microphone, having a good audio sound effect when something hits, because that's the other thing that doesn't make the sledgehammer all that impressive. I mean, you know, you don't get some big, like, I mean, the Singapore cane or the kendo stick, I mean, by its very nature, it's those slats of wood tied together. And so when it hits, it makes, you know, that, you know, distinctive crack sound. Like the sledgehammer, by comparison, doesn't have that, I don't know what you want to call it, that cue or that signature sound.
Right.
Yeah, I like the Singapore cane, but, you know, I think it's been overdone. I think too many guys have tried to incorporate it. Like, it's almost like WWE has almost tried to make that as ubiquitous as like a folding chair.
Yeah.
And, you know, what I'll cite as evidence is like, okay, I can accept that when guys are in a hardcore match, or even not in a hardcore match, and they reach under a ring and there's like a ladder or a table or a garbage can. But like, when, like, there is no practical reason to store kendo sticks under a wrestling.
Sure. I get that. And you're right. And I want to say too, props to you for also using the word ubiquitous like I did. So you can listen to Shoot Radio and learn some new vocab, everybody. The Singapore cane in
East... Not all wrestling fans are dumb.
I never said that, but a new word's a new word, no matter what your IQ is. That's all I'm saying. Sandman used it perfectly. That was his thing. Then even in ECW, Just Incredible, I kind of bought that. Then you come into WWF, and I think Steve Blackman was using it, and maybe a couple other guys, and now you're exactly right. It's kind of ruined, because underneath the ring are chairs and a fire extinguisher and ladders and tables and kendo sticks / Singapore canes. And I don't know. I actually have one. Did I ever tell you that?
You did.
When I see you in a couple months, I'll have to show you. And it's, I will say, I'm pretty sure, and this is just speculation, so if you got some real actual insight, please let us know, shootradioshow@gmail.com. But I'm pretty sure that while a quote-unquote real Singapore cane and the kind we can buy are similar, I know that, remember when that guy in the early 90s,
spray painted a car or something?
Yeah, he probably wrote like DX on a car. Or like fucking NWO rules.
On a Funaki number one.
Right. He wrote that, and he got caned like 10 times. And part of it, the Singapore cane, is when those bamboo, it's like four pieces, you know, in a like a square kind of sort of, you know, tied together. When it hits the skin, it grabs the skin and then closes up. It opens and closes and grabs the skin, and as you pull it back, it's supposed to take like chunks of flesh with you. That's the real purpose of it. I'm pretty sure that the ones we buy are versions of a real one, but they're like tied up though. So You know how, like, when someone gets hit with it, it kind of splits and they still keep using it?
Yeah.
I think that's really where it's the real, like, version of it.
Well, the words in wrestling, I mean, Singapore cane and kendo stick are used interchangeably, and I think those are different things.
Okay, so...
Because kendo is basically, you know, practice sword play.
So do you think that none of these are actually Singapore canes?
No, I think, like, because a kendo stick is essentially, to the best of my understanding, is like a wooden sword.
Like a play sword, though.
Yeah, like a, not a place, like, I mean, it's still a weapon, but it's like meant as an approximation of a metal sword. Okay. Whereas what you described, the four things taped together, that's, you know, a Singapore cane or, you know, something meant for, you know, the purpose of, you know,
tearing flesh out,
torturing somebody.
So what was used in, like, the wrestling we watched? What did Sandman use?
I think that's closer to what's a Singapore cane. I think that's more accurate.
And what's in WWF or WWE, rather?
Same. I think it's the same.
Oh, okay.
So all I was saying is, I think, like, you hear the word kendo stick, but I think that word is used incorrectly.
Okay. We should probably do some research. Again, if anyone has any feedback, because I actually think it's the opposite. I thought these were more kendo sticks and not canes. As in, if they were canes, somebody would get hurt. I don't know.
I'm just doing a Google image search right now. All right. So just bear with me one sec.
I'm not gonna bear with shit. I'm gonna fly to Toronto and fucking cane you in the head. So I'll give you a fun, while you're looking that up, a funny story about. So me and some of my buddies were at, this was probably like 1999 or so. We were at, I think, a Comic-Con, and you know how they have weapons dealers at a lot of these conventions, swords and different things. Well, one of them had these Singapore canes, so we all bought one. And as soon as we got home, what did we do in our, like, 20? I would say we were all about 20, 21. What did we do with our maturity? Whack each other in the head until we had red marks and skin and, like, a little bit of blood. Not, like, full-on, like, cut, but we did hit each other in the skull many times with this, and I don't know why, because we're fucking morons, but we did that, and I'm kind of proud of it. I took a lot of cane shots. And right afterwards...
Shots from Glenn Jacobs? Like, from Kane?
I wish. No, from actually Kane from Kung Fu.
All right. I think I was... just some quick Google searching. I think I'm wrong, because it looks like what, you know, we're used to seeing in WWE as described as a Singapore cane. I guess if we're using the correct word, it's a shinai. And if Wikipedia can be trusted, it says, is a weapon for practice and competition in kendo, representing a Japanese sword. Shinai are also used in other martial arts, but maybe styled differently and with different characters. But this looks like the thing Sandman carried around, like the four reeds or whatever tied together. But
yeah, then that's what I have.
But there's also, like, when I looked up, like, kendo sword, there are, like, just basically, you know, like a wooden katana type of deal. But I think we've exhausted the topic of the Singapore canes.
All right. Well, since the Singapore cane's supposed to kill somebody, let's bring it over to that. What about Paul Bearer's urn?
See, that's interesting, too, because that's when you get into, you know, things that are affectations, I guess you could say, that, you know, get worked into being foreign objects. Because did, like, at least initially, like, the urn was more, it was like a, you can get super nerdy here, like, that was like a magical focus item for the Undertaker. It wasn't really, like, I think later on they hit people with it, but initially for a long time, like, it was just more... like the source of the Undertaker's power, wasn't it?
That was where it was kind of like he needs that, or else he has no, like, it's, you know, I mean, he needs that to keep him going. That was his thing back when he used to wear the hat and all that.
Exactly, that he, like, mugged from Billy Jack Haynes or something like that. But
totally.
But yeah, that's interesting, because there's been other examples of that in wrestling where you've got, because remember when Kamala was managed by that guy, the Wizard, who was actually the Curtis Iaquea, like a big sort of fat guy with a bald head with all these creases in it, and he shouted all the time when he talked.
Yeah.
And remember he had the Sharkhan tiger tooth.
He had this big,
he just had this big big tooth, like tooth looking thing around his, the wizard did on a rope around his neck, and he called it the Shark on Tiger Tooth. And I remember in a promo, Hogan called it the, and I don't know if he was making a joke or whether he was just out of it, but he called it the Chaka Khan Tiger Tooth.
That's pretty awesome. That was a weird one too, definitely. I mean, obviously Kamala is an out there character, but it worked for him.
Yeah, I mean, it's the more over the top. And he came to the ring. You know, it was funny because he came to the ring and he had that big like tribal mask, and he would usually be carrying a big stick or even like, you know, just to show how enlightened, you know, wrestling was, a spear. And but I never remember those being, you know, particularly incorporated in matches. Although I do remember a great visual of the cover of a wrestling magazine, where it had Kamala, you know, probably taken from a ring entrance, where he's got that big goofy tribal mask on and the spear, and they had like, you know, pre-Photoshop, but just like cropped with like a pair of scissors, like Hogan's head, and put it on the spear, and he was bleeding. So it was from some match where Hogan was bleeding, and you just see like this picture of like, you know, Kamala with Hogan's head on a spear.
Was that in like WWF magazine or something?
No, this was like, you know, Wrestling Illustrated or something.
Yeah,
like
PWI
that.
Or some one of those ones.
Yeah, like an After mag. But yeah, it was just, even as like an 11-year-old, you're just like, boy, there's some real racism in there.
Oh, no question. I mean, unfortunately, there's a lot of underlying racism in a lot of the matches, you know. And
yeah, if you're looking for enlightenment, I mean, don't make wrestling your first stop.
We should do an episode in our next season about like, I don't know, something like a what have I learned, or like a, I don't know, something like something.
What,
you know,
wrestling
what
has taught me
though,
by
right?
Negative counterexample.
Like, you know, wisdom in wrestling or something. And, you know, where you talk about stuff like that, like, well, I learned that, you know. Just something goofy stuff. It could be like, you know, things that are totally inappropriate too. So we'll talk about that. What are some other good foreign objects on your list?
One of the ones that I remember really fondly, going to go, you know, dip into WCW here for a second. But do you remember in the late 90s, Chavo Guerrero was doing this gimmick where he had this like hobby horse?
Yeah, he had a name for it, didn't he?
Pepe. And it was like, I don't know why, but that just always struck me as really funny. And he would put it in the corner and like prop it up so that it was looking at the match.
Yeah.
This was just such a random moment in time, but I just remember so clearly Chavo had some match on Nitro, and he had Pepe propped up in the corner.
Oh,
and
yeah.
and the cameraman did like an over the shoulder shot from Pepe.
Oh, nice.
And like Tony Schiavone, like, I mean, for as much as that guy gets ribbed, he gets cut up on for, you know, being a terrible commentator, he had some gems once in a while. And, you know, Tony's doing his, he's calling the match, and then they cut to this camera shot where it's like, you know, the Pepe over shoulder shot, and like Tony Schiavone, without missing a beat, like he calls a move that Chavo does, and then he just says, as Pepe looks on.
So yeah, he kind of he felt like, you know what, it was a good time to add a little character to this this character, and I thought it was great. I mean, in a way, it was similar like we were talking about earlier with Head and Al Snow, same kind of thing where it's part of their character, and they're also a little crazy as well. I do remember, yeah, the horse. Did he take that into WWF when he joined or no?
No, they did some angle where like Raven threw it in a wood chipper or something. Okay. Or somebody threw it in a wood chipper.
There was something I remember with it. All right, well, let me ask you something. What about foreign objects that, I guess this is a kind of going further on the Chavo thing, that are for goofy characters and like goofy reasons? Like what comes to mind is Sacco or something, or Santino's Cobra. Like those are, they're there for comic relief, but they're also there for in-ring purposes too. What do you think about that?
It comes down to the guy. I mean, if the guy can get it over with, I mean, Santino and the Cobra, I mean, for a move that's basically like poking somebody, he's got that over as a legit finisher. And I mean, the more over the top he can make it, I mean, good on him. I mean, I don't know who came up with the idea of having that snake stocking that he puts on his arm, but I mean, I think it's great. I mean, it's just part of the theatrics of wrestling. I mean, if he just, by comparison, if he just tried to get that move over by just walking up and like, you know, making his, you know, pointing his fingers like that and touching someone, I mean, no one would ever respond to it. So, I mean,
well, it sort of started like that. It's kind of started with, it wasn't a straight just like poke, which is funny because total, you know, classic heel maneuver, you know, poke in the eye or whatever, you know, that's a heel move. But you put a, you know, you put some character into it and it becomes part of your thing. He started off where it was just the pose. I don't think he initially put the sock on until he figured, wow, I really have something.
No, it was already over by the time he put the sock on, but he had that elaborate setup.
Right. Where he held his arm out.
Yeah.
He hits his arms like Macarena on one arm, you know, and flipping around. Yeah. And then like, I mean, 10 years prior, you got Socko from Mankind, you know, doing that whole thing. And so it's kind of, I don't know. I mean,
well, even if you remember before that with Mankind, remember he had that weird glove that sort of had his ring finger and his middle finger, sort of like his index finger and his pinky were free, but he had like this yes. leather enclosure over his middle finger and his ring finger. Like even that, like the first time you saw it, I remember thinking like, okay, what's that going to be about?
Well, and that was when he was actually Mankind, like the actual character. Later on, I mean, I called him Mankind. I probably should have said Mick Foley because he hasn't been real Mankind in, you know, 15
no.
years. You know, with the brown, you know, the brown clothing and the that weird. I love the weird, creepy music he used to come out to, like, you know, totally like Psycho Ward.
Remember, he had different music for when he came out and when
he
left.
Oh yeah, when he left, it was like that, like Have a Nice Day, kind of like
it's like piano music.
Yeah, so awesome, great character, totally great character. But yeah, so then you said you kind of like it. I have to disagree. I don't really like the goofy foreign objects that make you even more over the top and ridiculous. Like Santino is already a comic relief character. So has Mick Foley most of the time become. Then you give them that. It makes all the kids in the audience be like, oh, here it comes. I'm going to buy my own Socko from WWE Shop Zone for $50. And it's not needed. I know it gets them more over, but it as an adult wrestling fan, it kind of drives me a little crazy.
So do you think it'd be better if he didn't have it?
Yeah, I think it would be better if guys that were there for comic relief were there for comic relief and didn't, you know, hold major titles. That drives me crazy. We'll talk more on the title episode next season, but I mean, Santino.
I'd love to hear your arguments in favor of the U.S. title in 2012 being a major title. But
was that a shot at the U.S. because you're Canadian? Because, sir, that racism will not be tolerated on this show.
That's nationalism, not racism. Get it straight.
I'm a dumb American. I can't get it straight. I wasn't fucking taught that shit in schools.
The race of America.
The race of America is fucking greed. We're green people. That's what we are. But I want to say just as a foreign object, I don't think it's needed for those guys. I think those are already goofball gimmicks, and all it does is allow you to sell those in the shop zone and have little kids cheer you on more. I don't think it furthers the gimmick or storyline anymore.
Well, I mean, you're correct. I mean, we're kind of straddling a gray area there because, I mean, that's coming down to, like, ring attire. I mean, he could theoretically, like, come out to the ring and just have that on. I mean, and it's not really...
Well...
Like, you, even within the context of wrestling, I mean, the Cobra is not made more devastating by the fact that he puts this, you know, stocking on his hand.
Okay, so you're saying technically the Cobra is not a foreign object. Is that what you're kind of saying right now?
Well, at least not in the same way, like, you know, a kendo stick or a chair or a guitar is.
Okay. Well, actually, is a Cobra...
Because, okay, let me put it this way. The Cobra is done in plain view of the referee.
Well, that's exactly what I was going to say. Cobra's a legal move, right? Cobra.
Yeah.
But mandible claw isn't, right? Is that a... That's a choke, isn't it? Like a similar... I mean, you put your hand in his mouth, but wasn't the mandible claw actually supposed to be like a 5 second, or am I off here on this one?
I always remember it as a finisher. I mean, it was a submission move.
Well, I don't
ever remember the referee counting five for it.
Okay.
I don't want to go on record and say that categorically, but I don't recall that.
You're probably right. To me, it seems, you know, kind of, you know, a little over the top in that it's essentially, you know, like not a choke. I mean, why is that allowed and other things aren't? But okay, I'll give those to you. We'll move on from there. Let's talk more about gimmick-based ones. talking about 80s, talking about Honky Tonk Man, the guitar, Jimmy Hart and the megaphone, we got to talk about Jake the Snake's Damien or Lucifer. And
see, I'm glad you brought that up, like just animals as foreign objects in general.
Okay,
too.
We'll talk about Hacksaw's 2x4, but let's stick with animals right now.
That's not an animal.
It's not? No, he's an animal.
Okay.
So the animal, the George the Animal Steel. Hey, how about mine?
Mine. That was product placement. Totally.
So Damien, the snake, and then I think it was Lucifer later, as a foreign object, he puts that snake on you. That's usually the end of the match right there, or it already ended, and now he's just fucking with you. And that was pretty intense as a kid watching that.
Yeah, now did he ever use the snake mid-match? I seem to recall him, like, because, I mean, yeah. You know, they did that feud a million times where, like, you know, everybody that Jake the Snake feuded with all of a sudden developed a fear of snakes. And, like, he'd...
What, and you're not afraid of snakes?
I would say I have a phobia of snakes.
Okay, so you're in the ring with Jake the Snake, and we already know you're going to get your ass kicked because he's Jake the Snake Roberts.
I lost to Stan Stansky.
Because, well, he's... Did he? He's
no, I did.
Oh, you did. He's from Stone Mountain, Georgia. Not really, but... you're afraid of snakes. If he pulls that, he opens up that bag, he pulls out Damien, you're going to run. You wouldn't run if he pulled that out?
Well, I wasn't saying I wouldn't run, but I mean, it was always funny to see when he was in like a feud and like, you know, these guys would, you know, have heart attacks like Fred Sanford at like the mention of the word snake.
They go, oh, okay, okay. Yeah, I get what you mean. Okay. Now, I think he did use it mid-match because I remember like the ref being knocked out or distracted. And then he opens the bag up, uses the snake, and then, like, totally, like, before PETA and animal rights, just fucking throws the snake under, you know, under the bottom rope, slides out, or in the corner or something like that. Like, he would use it and then just, like, toss it aside and do his DDT. So I'm pretty sure he did do that.
Okay.
So, yeah, there was Jake the Snake. The snake is definitely a pretty solid foreign object. What are some other animals, like? Matilda,
Frankie
the parrot, Matilda. Yeah.
Did Frankie ever get involved in a match?
I'm pretty sure Frankie actually held more titles than Coco Beware did. I mean, sorry, bro. This is the way it is. But yeah, I don't know if Frankie ever got involved in a match. What about Matilda?
I remember distinctly when they were like, I think it was right around WrestleMania 3. When they were feuding with the Islanders, they would like get Matilda to like chase guys around the ring and stuff like that.
Yeah, and if you know what? If you're one of the two Islanders, I'm pretty sure you've cooked a dog like that before and fucking ate him. Like,
you went there.
No, nothing. Again, nothing racist or nationalist, whatever. I just mean, dude, they're Islanders. Like, come on, man. They're just doing whatever. They'd easily take care of that dog if they wanted to.
Well, I guess in the wrestling universe anyway, if you saw Sika eating like raw chicken and stuff like that, I guess it can make the hop that, you know, the Islanders would eat a dog.
Oh, that they should have totally done that gimmick. Like, all right, and we're doing a dog eating match. Like, oh shit, dog eating match. Islanders against the British Bulldogs, although they wouldn't eat their own dog.
I was going to say, what do the Bulldogs have to eat if they win?
Fish and chips.
But it has to be something that, like, the Islanders would they get to eat Bobby Heenan.
You think the they eat Heenan's head. You think the Islanders like fish and chips? They're probably fucking appalled by that. Come on.
No, but the gimmick in that match would be, like, if the Bulldogs lose, then the Islanders get to eat their dog.
Yeah, okay.
And then if the Islanders win, the Bulldogs get to eat Bobby Heenan.
Or no, if the Islanders lose, Bulldogs, why would they eat Bobby Heenan?
Because it's something important to the Islanders.
Bobby Heenan's skull? His brain?
Yeah.
His whole body? Yeah, maybe. Okay, I'll give you that. Maybe they have to eat a snake. That'd be kind of cool.
But why would that bug the Islanders? Like, where's the heat?
There's no heat. They're the fucking Islanders. You can't stop them. They were so good.
And their pink tights.
I'll show you pink tights.
And lack of shoes.
Lack of shoes. All right, so... back on the foreign objects, something that's been used in several promotions by several different managers, wrestlers and managers, the mist, like the spitting of something. Give me your take on that.
The green mist. That's very old school. Like, you know, that was usually the, when you had like the sinister heel from Japan that came out to like the flute music. Like that, you could usually count on them doing that. I think done right, it's pretty cool. Like, I used to really like it when Tajiri did it. And didn't the different colors of mist, like, were
different levels of effect?
Yeah. Like, didn't they? I can remember vaguely, like, Joey Styles, like, making a big deal when it was, like, maybe I'm getting these colors wrong, but, like, red mist as opposed to black mist or something like that.
It sounds vaguely familiar. I'm not 100% on that, but
because I like that. Because, I mean, the presupposition is, like, you know, he somehow magically produces this mist.
Right. Even,
and it's,
yeah,
like, you know, and, you know, the black mist, you know, that's just, like, you know, getting punched really hard. But, you know, the red mist, like, whoa.
That's a finisher.
Like, you know, that's like poisoning somebody.
Right. You know? And what's funny is I always used to wonder, like, you know, it's coming. So you love to watch that wrestler as long as possible and see, like, where's the part? Where's he going to do it? Where's the capsule or whatever he's putting in his mouth? And then, like, when the really good ones, like Tajiri, when you don't ever see anything at all that looks fishy, it's like, did he literally have that shit under his tongue the whole match? Like, you, and that's, I love that kind of stuff in wrestling, because there's very few things where they kind of, you mark out and kind of break that wall of, oh, holy shit, like, this is kind of real. Like, he literally had that mist in his mouth in a 20-minute pay-per-view match. That's fucking awesome.
And I've seen, like, at independent shows, like, I've seen the mist done, like, really, really badly, where you could see him, like, turning and, like, you know, reaching into his pocket and putting something in his mouth, and then, like, you know, it doesn't get that nice cloud. It just basically, like, comes out in a line, no, and then it's, like, dribbling all down his chin. So,
there should be somebody.
There is an art to it.
With, like, a vomit. I mean, even though Draws kind of, like, would puke, he was puke. Remember Vince was like, puke! Puke! But, like, that would be cool if that was, like, the same effect. Like, oh, the puke! He's out! Or, like, you know what I would do, like, as, like, another comical one? I'd, like, put a bunch of bubble gum in my mouth, and I would, instead of, like, blowing the mist, I would blow a giant bubble and let it hit him in the face. And, like, bam! Knocked out. He just got gummed. I don't know. Maybe not. They call me Bazooka Joe. That'd be my wrestling gimmick name. That's pretty fucking good.
Hubba Bubba.
Hubba Bubba's a good one, too. And Bubbalicious, of course. So give me some other ones.
No, that would be your manager.
What about I'm trying to think how to use the right term. Like, items when someone's injured, like a brace, or like Greg the Hammer Valentine's.
Yeah. I hadn't thought about that. Or the cast, like Cowboy Bob Orton.
Yeah, so what do you think about those? Like, those ones where, like, I always think about Greg the Hammer Valentine. He had a shin brace on, and it was there to protect him. But then, when it came time for the figure four, his finisher, he flipped it around so the actual foreign object would be right on the leg and cause extra pain. I thought that was perfectly done.
It's a great heel move.
Totally.
Because, yeah, like, that's a total heelish thing to do. It's like, no, I need this. Like, you know, I'm hurt. And Cowboy Bob Orton, I mean, he had that broken arm that, to this, I mean, I think it's 25 years and counting, you know, that arm hasn't healed. He still comes out with a cast.
Still not healed up.
Well, and Iron Mike Sharp, you know.
Literally, just, ever, they'd always say, oh, the foreign object.
Yeah. And he had that brace and stuff like that. No, I mean, it's a great heel tactic when you can take just something that, you know, in the right circumstances, I mean, you should be allowed to have. I also remember with Greg Valentine, I remember he had, like, I think he had a bunch of different shin guards, but I remember he actually had one that had an airbrushed, like, soup bone that was, like, broken in the middle on it.
Oh, yeah, where it was supposed to be, like, his bone? I didn't get that. What was the reason for that?
Well, it's just, I'm going to break your bones with my shin guard when I put you in the figure.
It was there to protect his bone. It was legal. Come on, man. That was a legal shin brace right there.
Oh, it was sanctioned. You know, you can't deny that.
He's healing that bone that's in there. It was totally legal. Totally legit.
So one thing I wanted to talk about as it pertains to foreign objects, that, you know, this is where I get a little, where I like to nitpick, is what something that infuriates me in wrestling is when you have foreign objects that, and we kind of touched on this earlier, like with the microphone. Foreign objects that have varying levels of effectiveness over time. Like, something that I really think should be the case, and, you know, one of the ones that I always go to is, you know, like using a title belt as a foreign object. Like, I mean, we've seen many matches where it's been a tough back and forth contest. They've taken tons of punishment, but when the champ reaches for the belt, and, you know, he smacks, or the whoever it is, when the heel reaches for the belt and, you know, smacks the other guy on the head with the belt, that's lights out.
I agree, and I'm cool with that, and I like that. I like the fact that in pro wrestling, it's great because science doesn't really apply. It's in pro wrestling, it's, well, what level of effect does this have? A sledgehammer, like, could literally kill you, but that's going to be used, you know, 10 plus times in a match where it's allowed, and the guy's still going to get up and walk away from it. But one hit from that title belt, you are lights out. I love that, because that means that it's another way of giving a title some prestige. We like to talk about kind of the old school and respect and that kind of thing. But if you're selling the fact that the title belt just knocked you out, I think that actually helps the storyline of the belt itself as being very prestigious.
Yeah, I agree. But what drives me nuts is when you see 1 week somebody gets hit with the belt, you know, and puts them out for a match. But then the next week, you know, they hit the belt and then the other guy picks him up and hits him with the belt, and it's going back and forth. And it's like, you know, all of a sudden, like, you know, it doesn't hurt anymore.
Well, that was the Intercontinental title. That's why.
No, okay. It doesn't hurt as much.
It's smaller. It's
like, and yeah, but the European title, like, that doesn't even hurt when you get hit with that.
Well, it hurts American fans, like, in their heart, though. That's really what
that's right. Yeah. It only hurts Europeans.
Like, you know, like,
once you hit Steven Regal with that, he's done.
Once William Regal's out and Davey Boy Smith's out, it's like, no one can fight for this belt anymore. But, yeah, I get what you're saying with that. Or how about the bell, when they hit somebody with a bell? That's another one, like the microphone, where it's a good sound effect.
And that used to be a big deal. Like, I remember one of the injury angles that I thought that really resonated with me was when Macho Man put Ricky Steamboat over the guardrail, and he jumped off the top rope with the ring bell.
Yeah.
And like that was a real moment in time. And, you know, but what I think that speaks to is, we're kind of in a paradigm now in 2012 where, you know, it's probably gone too far in one way to really undo. But I mean, you didn't see people getting hit with foreign objects every week. I mean, you maybe did a little bit if you had a guy like a Mr. Fuji with his cane, and, like, you know, he would pass it to Demolition or something, and they would use it to work a guy over in a match.
But a gimmick-based weapon got used way more often than a generic weapon.
But there were certain ones that were kind of, when you saw somebody pull it out, it was a big deal. Like, I remember there was one, forget what show it was on, but it was, I think it was Roddy Piper against Bret Hart for the Intercontinental title in, like, either the late 80s or really early 90s. And there was one point in the match, because it was when they were both baby faces, if I'm remembering correctly. And there was this really great storytelling moment in the match when they started out the match, you know, they shook hands. It's like, you know, okay, we're both baby faces. We're fighting for this title, but we respect each other. But then throughout the match, like, part of the story that was being told was kind of, you know, Piper was getting in the heat of the moment. And there's one point where he goes for the ring bell. The referee's distracted or knocked out. And, like, he holds it up and he's about to, you know, clock Brett with it. But, like, he can't do it. And, like, he slowly lowers it and drops it. Like, it was just a really good moment in time. But I think it was the fact that, you know, that it was the ring bell. Big feuds leading up to that, like getting hit with the ring bell, always led to a serious injury. To see a guy on the level of somebody like a Piper about to hit Bret Hart.
Well, in that case, it was the non-hitting of the bell that put the bell over.
Yeah, but it was like, oh man, like if he, like what the story they were telling, and I think it came across, is boy, if he hits him with the bell, like this match is over.
Yeah, lights out, exactly. I like that kind of stuff. Again, it put foreign objects on a level, and they actually meant something, as opposed to just, I got hit with the bell. Cool. I'll be wrestling next week and just be just fine.
I don't think there's an object today that's like that anymore. One doesn't come to mind anyway.
Yeah, I'm trying to think. I don't really know.
Like Triple H tried to do that with the sledgehammer.
Well, I was about to say that. So they tried to do that, but here's the thing. You can't say, going back to that fucking sledgehammer, you can't say oh man, I got hit with a sledgehammer. He's out for 6 weeks. You know, Triple H, I end careers, all this kind of stuff. You can't really say that when you're hitting somebody with like your hand on there and we've already determined that this isn't hurting you. Like it's, you can't have both. You can't have over the top of, it goes, it's such a weird transition. You go from actual weapon that can kill somebody to, oh, it's not really hurting him that bad because he's hitting him wrong, to, oh no, it did. He's out for 6 weeks. Like you can't do that. And it drives me nuts. I want to get fucking John Paul Levesque on the phone right now. Get him on the horn, Chris. I want to have a word.
Okay, I'll speed dial.
Is he there?
No. He's not taking my calls.
Oh, what are you going to do? I tried. So we talked a lot about all the foreign objects out there from, you know, back in the 80s and 90s and modern day. And, you know, earlier I got accused of my nationalism and racism and all kinds of other isms that I don't believe in. I don't believe in isms.
Okay, Ferris.
But I will say, I got one thing to say about that. Ho! USA! USA! Hacksaw's 2x4. How awesome was that? When he hit Andre with that 2x4, he laid out a giant with that thing.
My favorite memory of the 2x4 is when he showed up to... Remember when they used to do like an actual awards show for the Slammies?
Oh, I love
like, it wasn't awards. It wasn't just like, you know, a few segments in the ring. Like they actually like booked a theater.
I loved it. That was how it should have. It should always be that way. One quick memory of that one, like in that mid-90s award, we talked earlier about women of wrestling and how I'm in love with Sunny. I'll never forget. She came out in one of those Slammies in like this see-through purple dress. You can see her pink, her purple thong. It was so fucking awesome. She was great. Anyway, go ahead. I had to do I had a boner. Yeah. I had a boner.
No,
what can I do?
No problem. You gotta just let those things happen.
I had a full 2x4. Sorry.
Yeah, you had wood.
Yeah, I had wood. Go ahead. Sorry.
But I remember Hacksaw coming out. It was just, and this is a bit of a side rant too. But just today's WWF, WWE, they just don't seem to have the same attention to detail that they used to. Because I remember at those awards shows, it was always really comical to me how they dressed up their wrestlers for an award show, because for the most part they showed up just wearing what they normally wear, but just with some additional part,
like I
remember
a tie.
Like King Kong Bundy, I remember him getting out of a limousine and like he's still just wearing like his black singlet and his boots, and he put on a top hat. And Hacksaw at the same Slammies, he's wearing like a tuxedo t-shirt.
Awesome.
And he had his 2x4, and the 2x4 had a bow tie.
I remember that. The 2x4 had nothing else on it but a bow tie towards the top. I totally remember that. And you know what I love? Like I talked about this on previous episodes, and again, we'll it's good to touch on now. We're kind of closing this episode out, but I somehow we got to talk on a future episode about like wrestlers that are out of character or something. Cause that to me, it's so interesting whenever they show them backstage, like eating, like who's sitting next to who's talking to who, and like that at the Slammies, what they're wearing. Like, I don't know why I think that stuff's really funny to me because it's almost like in a way I kind of have a feeling that it's like improv. So in some respects in that there's a storyline written by the writers, but yet we need to get all the wrestlers in the back because we're going to have a cake for this guy's birthday party. But other than that, do whatever you want. You know, I think that's how it is. I can't see them being, even with attention of detail in the 90s, I can't see them caring enough about that. But anyway, we gave a nice teaser there for our future seasons and episodes. We're going to have episodes that talk about that, that talk about the titles, that talk about... all kinds of cool ideas we had. If you listen to each one of these, if you're just listening to this episode 10, definitely go back and listen to 1 through 9. Or if you want to pick out the ones you think are interesting, maybe you don't care about tag teams, you don't want to listen to that. Or maybe you don't care about ECW, you don't want to listen to that one. But in each of those episodes, usually another idea for a show pops up, which is awesome because that means in our next season, we will have content for you to listen to. And really, this is the end of this season. We're going to take a little bit of a break, and we're going to come back after reading your feedback. We're going to check out all the feedback from Facebook, which is facebook.com/shootradio. twitter.com/shootradio. And of course, email if you want to reach us directly and, you know, not have it be public. Email us at shootradioshow@gmail.com. We're going to take all that stuff back and we'll reply to everything. And then we're going to work on our season 2 episodes. And we're going to cover not only new topics, but we're going to also talk about really anything that we or you listeners want us to add into the show. Maybe you might say, you know, you guys really need to have another episode on this topic. We could do that. We could do like a 2.0 kind of episode or part two. So really,
absolutely, yeah, because I mean, the topics that we've had so far, I mean, we've talked, you know, between an hour and a half on them. I mean, that's just scratching the surface on any of those topics.
That's true. So we've got a lot of material out there. And if you still want to listen to us, we're more than happy to keep putting out material for you to listen to. They're just two wrestling fans, you know, similar age, totally different areas of the world, but still having that love for the kind of traditionalist aspect of pro wrestling. And also we could laugh at it too and talk about some of the fun moments in the past, I don't know, 25, 30 years. It's pretty crazy when you really think about it and how much it's been a part of our lives. So we're glad you guys are listening. And you think it's interesting enough to make it through all the way to episode 10. I don't think I could listen to 10 episodes of me blabbing. So I'm glad you are.
I'm glad somebody's listening. Somebody. Or somebody's hearing this. Not but yeah, me. Thanks a lot for listening. Thanks for making it through 10 episodes of season 1. And we'll be back after a short break with some fresh content for season 2 of Shoot Radio.
Yep, and all details can be found at shootradio.com. I think it's time for me to hit you with the bell. Ding, ding. You're out.
Clunk.
Clunk. Title belt. Clunk. Pipe bomb. Boosh.
You can find more great podcasts at lifestylepodnetwork.com.au.